You're listening to Like Mother, Like Son on WJFF.
And that's my mother, Patricia Adams.
And that's my son, Ramsey Adams.
The show is like Mother, Like Son?
Yes. That's right, with
really?
The question mark.
With a question mark.
You know, it's a mother's son thing.
Welcome to Like Mother, Like Sons. You're in the studio with Patricia Adams, my mother, and John Adams, my brother, and me, Ramsey Adams. And it's the Adams Family Show on Radio Jeff in Catskills.
Spelled MD.
Well, welcome both. This is fun to be with both of my sons, Ramsey and John Hamilton, and we're going to be talking tonight with John Hamilton specifically about a project he's involved with and about his band.
So, John Hamilton, I never call you that, but that's what mother
that's
calls
That's what
you.
Mother's called.
Our father is John
he
Adams.
Can only, the things he calls me, we can only do on satellite radio.
But, you know, what I think the very interesting thing is that my brother has started a nonprofit organization called thekidsrock.org. And it's a really, really fascinating, great idea, and we want to talk to you about it. John, tell us a little bit about thekidsrock.org.
All right. Well, first thing that's important to say that I think is funny is I wanted to do this, you know, nonprofit thing called The Kids Rock. And so I started researching how to do a nonprofit organization. And I realized that you need a lot of money to start a nonprofit organization. And you need lawyers and you need accountants and things like that that cost a lot of money. So already nonprofit organizations start out with you need a profit to start a nonprofit. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to really do a nonprofit organization. And I don't even have, it's not even a nonprofit organization. It's just an organization. And it's called The Kids Rock. And so what The Kids Rock is going to do is, I'm a musician. I have a band. I have lots of friends who are in bands. And
the name of your band?
The name of my band is Statues of Liberty, and it's a trio. I'll tell you about that in a second.
Okay.
But what I've learned from playing out in the clubs is all of these bands are nonprofit organizations.
That's what your mother thinks too.
Yeah. So instead of, you know, so let's just be honest here and let's be nonprofit organizations for something good. So what I'm going to be doing is putting on shows in different cities, because I play with lots of great people in different cities and I've made a lot of good friends. And so in every city there's kids with cancer, and these kids with cancer, a lot of them also don't have insurance because insurance costs a lot of money, as we know. And so what I'm doing is I'm collecting, you know, donations, and I'm collecting CD players, and I'm collecting iPods to give to these kids that don't have insurance, so that while they're doing chemo and radiation, they're going through this whole process that's a real drag, spelled capital D-R-A-G, that they can listen to music and you know, have something to look forward to during their experience.
How does that normally work in a hospital where children are getting chemo? That's something like that's not really offered. They just sort of sit in a chair for a half an hour or whatever, and they get the chemicals that, you know, dripped into their veins. How does that work?
Well, let's mom and I let's be here's now we even have to step back even further. Mom and I. Well, I had cancer, and I didn't have insurance, and my mother, who's sitting right next to me, brought me to a lot of those chemos, and so we got to see the experience firsthand. And basically what you do is, you know, you sit there, you get...
As you said, the Kool-Aid dropping into your veins.
Yeah,
you
get Kool-Aid.
Chemical Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I call it a lot of things.
Is that why you're so conservative now? you got the Kool-Aid dripped into your butt?
Well, it wasn't into my butt.
You're going to have to cut that, Ramsey, because that's not true. I mean, it's not the
Well, there was things. I mean, if we want to get graphic, you don't have to cut it. It's a brutal doing chemo and getting going through the cancer experience is brutal, and every orifice gets invaded.
Right. Okay.
Let's be honest, it's true, and it's a painful process. And there's something I want kids to be able to see something good while they're going through this experience. And I remember that I loved listening to music. Because it doesn't require any energy, and it's music's a beautiful thing, you know. Whether you like heavy metal or whether you like rap or soul or funk or whatever you like, it's just good for your soul, and it makes you feel good. And while you're feeling bad, music can make you feel better.
Who will choose the music on the iPods? Will the kids, or how will that work?
Well, that's, you know, while I've gotten this ball rolling, so I'm running next to the ball trying to figure out all these things, and that's a great question. Basically, in the beginning, what I'm going to do is program these iPods with all the music, you know, that I have access to and my friends have access to. Eventually, what I'd like to have is one computer that's filled with lots of different kinds of music, because what I'd like to do is give these kids menus. So that because everybody's got different taste, and I'd like kids to be able to choose, hey, I like, you know, I want to hear, you know, Motorhead, or I want to hear, you know, Little Kim.
What age are these kids usually, from what to what, and what kind of cancer is being treated, at least at this point with the program?
Okay, the start of the program, we're going to work with kids with blood cancers, you know. Because that's what I had, and, you know, it's like you got to start somewhere. I can't, you know, I want to start and learn, and, you know, ultimately I'd like to hit every kid in the whole hospital. Do you know what I mean with something like this? But to start, it's going to be blood cancers. So there's like 100 kids at the hospital that we're going to start out with, and we're going to start.
This is at Mount Sinai, right?
Yes, we're going to start with the kids at Mount Sinai. And, well, that's the first phase. And then the next phase is the kids up in Danbury. So I'm researching a hospital right now, which hospital serves kids without insurance, and it looks like it's going to be the hospital in New Haven or the one in Farmington?
Farmingdale.
Well, this is a free-wheeling interview, and since we're all family here, I mean, I got a couple of thoughts, John. First of all, you know, the whole rights issues around downloading music and sharing music. Steve Jobs and EMI both agree that this is a ridiculous system that they've got going on where you can't share your music, and especially with kids with cancer. Right? So yeah. I throw that out as a thought in listening to you talk about sharing music on iPods and letting kids have menus to choose from.
Right. I mean, you know, the legal issues of this whole thing, I'll admit, could get a little tricky, but I'm going to let the people who deal with law deal with that, and I'm going to deal with music and kids. Do you know what I mean? And so whatever legal issues arise, I'm sure someone will let me know, or someone's going to help me out with it, because this is, no one's making any money here. All we're doing is helping kids, and that's a great point that you bring up. And I've thought about it a lot. But just like in the beginning when I said, hey, I want to do a nonprofit, and I realized how hard it is to do a nonprofit, that's not going to stop me from doing what I want to do, because and doing what, you know, lots of people want to do.
I'm not afraid.
let me ask you how you get the hardware. So you go do a concert with Joker 5-Speed and some of these other great bands in New York in the alternative rock scene. You do it down in the Village, you go to Pennsylvania, you go to D.C., you do these shows. Where do the actual hardware come from in doing a show? Is it from the money that you'd raise at the door, you go buy them, or people buy them and give them to you, or a little bit of everything?
It's going to be a whole big mix. You know, I have started a website, thekidsrock.org, and if you go there, then there's a donate page. And so already I'm getting donations. People can choose. If you have the money, you can buy us an iPod. And
what's an iPod cost?
Anywhere from like $70 to $300.
So for $70, you can get a kid an iPod, basically.
Yeah, or you can get a $30 CD player. You know, there's lots of choices. Or you can send a check for a dollar. And I'm just doing everything and get this done. Like, the first aim is, like, there's 100 kids.
Right.
So when I'm done, 100 kids are going to have something to listen to. They're either going to have an iPod or they're going to have a CD player.
And these are 100 kids at Mount Sinai without insurance. And that's the criteria. Kids got some form of cancer, but no insurance?
Yeah. Yeah, that's. I got to start with something specific, you know, and
there's a clinic there for kids.
Yes, and there's
right?
a clinic there, and that's where I went through my Hodgkin's disease, and you know, Mount Sinai saved my life, and this is a way for me to say thanks.
Will the kids keep the iPods, or will they only use them while they're in for treatment?
Well, see, I would like to give them the iPods.
Uh-huh.
Now, the problem with that is that. You know, well, not the problem. The beauty of that is kids get cured.
Right.
And then they go home and they take their iPods with them. And you know what? I think that that's great.
Right, right. Why not?
What that leaves me with is in 6 months or a year, I have to get another iPod there.
Right. You need another 100 iPods or whatever.
But
yeah.
You know what? I hope that that's what happens.
Right.
I hope that 100 iPods go home with 100 kids. And then I have to get 100 more or 50 more. You know,
right.
We'd like less cancer. More kids going home with iPods.
Okay. I want to go back and talk to both of you all about the importance of music in your lives, because from a relatively young age, you were playing with instruments, the band. You were in a band together. Your first band was Yasmar.
It was Bad Karma.
Oh.
Yes, it was.
Great band. One of my favorites.
And both of you were interested sort of in punk back in the 80s. And so tell me both, now I'm asking my sons about those early years and how important music was to you during that time.
Well, for me, I think that buying a guitar when I was, 12 or 13, maybe 14 at the oldest, and then John buying a bass gave us a real way as brothers to share something very intimate, and that was music and art. And it was probably one of the most important relationships I've ever had in my life, was that relationship of sharing music, writing music, performing together, or planning on performing together. And it drove our relationship through my late 20s. I mean, we had a band together up until I was probably 27 before we went our separate ways on the music front, but it was really one of the most important relationships creatively I've ever had. And, you know, it drove our relationship as brothers, in my opinion. So,
yeah, I agree. I mean, that was a great, Ramsey and I had a blast, and it was great. And we did share, you know, love of punk rock. Punk rock, you know, in the a quote from the Minutemen is, punk rock changed our lives, you know, and that's what punk rock did. Punk rock, you know, gave Ramsey and I freedom to shave our heads, to be different, to get a mohawk, to put on two different colored sneakers and get kicked out of school, and, you know, everything. You know, it gave you the punk rock. My first punk rock show was Black Flag, and I remember looking up my friend who we had driven down to the city. No, we had taken a train. We were too young to drive, but we looked at each other, and we knew. We were like, wow. This is insane. You know, these guys are free. This
just
is...
mention a little bit that when you were in Ireland, was punk on the way out then, or was it still pretty fresh there?
No.
That was, what, 82 or something like that?
No, punk was you know, there was two different scenes, obviously, you know, getting specific, but, you know, England and Ireland had a different kind of punk rock scene, and no, it was just flourishing there. But the American punk rock, the American hardcore scene was really getting going, and, you know, it was just like, you know, at that time, the bands that we were forced to listen to were huge bands like Asia and Journey, and everybody's wearing, you know, these Sassoon pants and stuff like that, and, you know, it's so boring and horrible. And it was great to, like, you know, put on a pair of combat boots and you know, people, I remember people looking at, I remember I shaved my head and it was, I was like a leper.
And it was it was sort of a rebellion too.
Oh yeah, it was full rebellion. Right. I mean, it was great rebellion. It was like real rebellion. Yeah.
Now you both lived in Seattle. Was there any music scene there that you could say? That influenced you. I know there was a music scene. But
well, there's a funny joke about, at least in my own mind, about how we've been in all the right spots at all the right times and actually missed the. You know, we were there with Nirvana, living it, and you know, literally right there with it. Somehow, I wasn't invited to play guitar in Nirvana, though. I don't know why, but you know, but the punk scene, we were, you know, like John said, there with Black Flag, and you know, just the whole New York scene was
hot.
The
scene
Seattle was ferocious crazy. When we were there, and it's gone now. And then, even you know, the scene, the post punk scene in New York, when we were, you know, when Banana Fish was really, you know, at its early heyday. That was a lot of the great, you know, New York bands grew out of that scene too. And, you know, it's been an interesting, you know, retrospective on music. And actually, I think that the Statues of Liberty, which is John's new band, is really an accumulation of all of those experiences. And I really see in this band all the lessons learned and
Tell us just a little bit about the Statues of Liberty, John Hammond.
Well, Statues of Liberty is born because, like Ramsey said, we were in a band called Banana Fish Zero. And then when I ended Banana Fish Zero after like a 7-year run, which was a great run, I joined a band called The X's. And that was an interesting thing because we toured around and it was a much more kind of like industry type thing.
Well, you had the lead singer from the band Fuel, Brad Scallions, in the band, and he went on. He's playing with the guys from
The Doors now.
The Doors. I mean, this is so you really had a you know, it was a marketing band, a band that could be marketed kind of strategy, right?
Yeah, and it was great, but you know, for me, it's something that I learned, and I loved that the, you know, that I learned it with the X's was I'm a punk. She's so heavy, I can't breathe. Oh, that girl is crushing. Head in the sky.
Okay, we're back with Like Mother, Like Sons this evening, and I'm talking to my sons, Ramsey and John Hamilton. And since I'm a parent talking to you, John Hamilton, you're now a parent, and your daughter, Lulu, sometimes sings with you in various venues.
She does. She's awesome. Lulu, you know, my rule about being a parent is let the kids tell you what they want to do. And so Lulu decided she wanted to be in a band. She saw my band play a lot. She said, Dad, I want to play in a band. So we did a bunch of shows together. We're called the Hot Roses. I just play stuff, and she just sings off the cuff. And they're the most genius, most beautiful songs I've ever heard in my life.
And yeah, I've heard it too. She's quite amazing.
It's amazing stuff. And she actually started to attract a crowd. And then one day, she kept asking me to book shows, and we were just about to go to a show, and she said, Dad, I don't want to go.
And that's been it for a while? She's gone on to something else?
Yeah, because it's all about fun, and, you know, she's a diva, and she's only 8 and a half.
That's fair enough. Sounds good.
Yeah, she's learning from Dad, you know. She's gonna do everything Dad didn't.
Well, you know, let's go back to this, the harsh reality of what happened to you and your experience, and then, again, how you decided to launch this nonprofit. So, basically, you got cancer without insurance. I mean, I know the story, but I think it's sort of a funny story how, I mean, you were a model at the time, a fashion model, and making a good chunk of change, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it is a funny story. It's a comedy of horror. I was a model. I was making great money, traveling the world, first class stuff, you know, it was really cool. And I had, you know, saved some money, and I was doing well, and I was living in New York City, I got a lump on my neck, and I went to get it checked out. And, you know, the short story is it turns out to be Hodgkin's disease, which is lymphoma. And I remember the doctor, when he was delivering the news, said, so what insurance do you have? And I said, I don't have insurance. And he said, you got to be kidding me. And I said, I'm not kidding you. I'm 25. Why would I have insurance?
He said, because.
And he said, because this is going to cost you $1 million. And I said, well, it's actually not, because I don't have it. And so what are we going to do? And he said, well, you have to go to a clinic. And he did direct me to a clinic that was fantastic.
I think I recall my mom and dad also involved in that process a bit, though.
Oh, yeah.
It was a pretty complicated. Finding the clinic and getting into it was
a
lot harder than that.
There was a lot of bureaucracy and things to fill out, but there's this little vignette story. We went in for you to qualify for the clinic. There was a young woman in a tiny little cubicle. She had a picture of her child there, and she had to write down all your information, like what was your last year's salary.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of thing. And I thought, here's this woman maybe making $20,000 a year, maybe a single mom living in a small apartment, and she looks at you, and you're in there applying to go into the clinic, and you made this enormous amount of money the year before. And she just put all that in very calmly, and I think she said, and what will you make this year? And you said, nothing, because you can't be a model when you're, you know, in chemo. And I just want to use her as an example of the general dignity of the people that we dealt with, even in the bureaucracy there. And I hope other people find that true, too, because quite remarkable.
The other thing about that story is, they told me, they said, you're going to pay for, you know, all the money, you're going to pay for everything until you're broke. Yeah. And that's what I did. I paid, you know, and everything costs, nothing costs $100.
Right.
Everything costs tens of thousands of dollars.
Didn't take long to go through everything.
I quickly went through, I think it was $80,000, and then I was broke.
Right.
And then I got to officially be in the clinic.
Right. And even though the clinic was a really marvelous thing, gave you great treatment, this is not to recommend that people don't have insurance. Although a lot of people can't afford it.
Well, there's also no guarantee you get into the clinic, right? I mean,
right.
It's not.
I don't think that's true. I asked them that. I said, you know, what's the deal here? How did this work for me? You know, and they said, well, every hospital has a bottom line built in. You can't turn people away. Like, oh, sorry. You know.
So there is one good thing about our healthcare system in America?
America is a beautiful place. Nobody really ultimately gets turned away. You know, I mean, everybody gets Well, they try to save everybody.
So, John, tell us again exactly what, you know, what can we do here to help you and thekidsrock.org? We want to get kids. It's iPods and CD and personal CD players, right? The kind that with headphones, not CD players, the kind you put on your shelf, right?
Right. Well, what we're, you know, initially what I want to do is, the initial phase is to get these CD players and iPods for these kids.
It's 100.
Yeah, 100 kids.
So it's about 100 times 100 is
10,000 bucks is what we're looking at raising. And I'm putting on a show June 2nd at the Trash Bar in Brooklyn. And then I'm going to put on another show June 30th at Cousin Larry's in Danbury. And I'm going to keep doing it. And ultimately, you know, my big dream is to do bigger and better things for kids too, which is, you know, to buy them instruments, to buy them, to take them to shows, to entertain kids, because like I said, in the hospital there's things built in. They do the medical part and they do the transportation part and they do a lot of things at these hospitals to help these kids without insurance. But the one thing that a hospital can't do is, hey, let's entertain these kids too, you know.
Right.
And so that's what I want to
know that there's kids up in the Catskills who have cancer too, you know, and they probably go through Harris and other places. Is there on the website a way for you to get emails from people and help think about ways to help some of those kids too?
Yeah, anybody can write me on, you know, thekidsrock.org, and that's what this is about, and that's why the website's up, so that people can contact me. And you know, already it looks like there's going to be a show now down on Virginia Beach. And
so people are writing you saying they want to be a part of this.
Yeah,
musicians.
Musicians and just people in the music business. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Great.
And so, you know, anything helps. You know, I mean, that's the point here, is everything helps.
Okay.
And
well, I must say I'm very proud of both of you. It's been wonderful to talk to you and hear about this project that you're doing and to see how these years of commitment and love for music for both of you has come to this fruition, among other things as well. So glad we were able to talk about it.
Well, thanks for lending us the barn. That's where we used to practice.
Yes, I remember. And not just the barn, the dining room, the upstairs hall, and the house rocked, right, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, John Hamilton's name on the website and in the band is John Law. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm John Law in the music stuff.
So when you get to the website and you're trying to figure out who John Hamilton is, it's John Law. And your email is?
The email is thekidsrock.org.
That's the website.
Oh, yeah.
On the website, you'll find me there.
Great.
Yeah. I'll be awaiting.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, John.
Thanks, you guys.
Okay. Good night now from Like Mother, Like Son. That's my son,
John Law.
And that's my son,
Ramsey Adams. And this is my mother, Patricia Adams, our mother.
Like
Mother,
Mom.
Visit us online
like
at
www.likemotherlikeson.org. No, likemotherlikeson.org. No S on our website.
Right.
And Mark Sutton, who's quiet in the studio today. Thank you, man.
Good night.